Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 297, episode 2 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take, I guess you could say, a deep dive into America's shared consciousness.
Yeah.
It's Wednesday, July 26,
2023. Uh-oh, you know what that means. It is National Coffee Milkshake Day, National Bagel Fest Day, National All or Nothing Day, National Aunt and Uncle's Day. Shout out to the aunties out there. I don't say aunt. I say aunt. I don't know. Auntie. I don't know. Are you an auntie or your aunt?
I think aunt? It's situational. I grew up like in different places, and some of them were aunt and some of them were aunt. So like, I think I call all of my aunts aunts. I'm like Aunt Carolyn. Aunt Betty,
yeah,
because that's what when I was very young, that's what I I was pronouncing it. But then, definitely went through an aunt phase.
Oh, I stayed there, never left. Also, shout out! It's National Disability Independence Day, so
nice,
packed full of celebrations. July 26th.
I like whoever the dramatic motherfucker is who made it National All or Nothing Day.
Dude, the fucking picture on the website is a guy tightrope walking across like a chasm. It's like, oh shit, man, nice. I could fucking die, man. It's all or nothing, babe. So yeah, I guess that's what you're supposed to do. Just go all in. Don't hesitate. Just be confident.
Happy all or nothing. I think that's good advice for the modern world. Just go all in, you know,
go
strong
in,
and wrong.
Dude.
It seems like that's working out well for all of us. My name's Jack O'Brien, aka you don't know what that fish should taste like, dude. You don't have the first clue. Which Swedish fruit ain't no particular taste, I'm betting you'll ever guess. But it's lingonberry fruit in your fish. That is courtesy of Scotty Magoo on the Discord. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Oh, my God. It's Miles Gray. Shout out to the Lord of Lankershim, the peacekeeper of Pasadena, for preventing full-out brawls at the Rose Bowl. That is my AKA coming
there
off that last weekend. I was telling you this after recording. I'm still, like, affected by all that shit that was popping off in the stands. Anyway. Thanks
seeing adults
me.
Unresolved shit like fucking up their kids' lives in real time, like at very important developmental stages, can be difficult.
Yeah. I hope like in that child's formative memory, he remembers me as the person that helped his father, you know, become just overly violent at a sporting event. And I wonder if his dad's like, if that one dude didn't freaking stop me, I would have stomped him out. Don't be like that guy, son.
I told you about how I have that one kid who I imprinted on at like a very young age, because it was when like my job was pool boy and also like unofficial lifeguard. And I like jumped in. It was a tiny pool. I just like waded over to him and pulled him out while he was drowning. And his mom like chose not to jump in when he was like, I was like, is he okay? Can he swim? Is that just a funny way that he swims? And then like I saw her like 2 days later, she's like, he won't stop talking about you. And he was like a real like violent kid. Like I was like noticing, like he was like stomping his little sister's like dolls on the head and shit.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like I'm on borrowed time and that kid's going to show up at my door like Anton Chigurh at some point in the next 10 years and just be like,
well,
hey, friendo.
What, Jack? That boy was me.
No, my God. Anyways, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined by an Emmy Award winning comedian and the host of the new podcast, Indecent, where she talks to experts about what is and isn't considered acceptable in today's society, who sets the boundaries for today's taboos. Mm-hmm. Please welcome to the show, Kiki Anderson!
Kiki!
Hello, hello!
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. You're an Emmy Award winning journalist, correct? And you're classing the join up by coming over here. I like what made you transition from journalism to comedy? I'm always interested when people have like I was a lobbyist and then was like, I want to do comedy. So I'm always interested when people are like, yeah, I did that. Got my Emmy. Now I'm doing comedy.
Yeah, well, you know, journalism is a hard, tough industry. And so I decided to go to comedy because it's notoriously easy.
Yeah. Of course. At least the laughs, at least everyone's laughing together when things are going bad in comedy, I guess, than watching like a newspaper or publication.
Yeah, and I like getting paid nothing. Like, it's good. So, you know, journalism, comedy, it's all the same.
Yeah. It's exposure.
Yeah, entry-level comedy is like a pretty great track to be on. Parents are always impressed. And, you know, they're like, oh, that's great. And so what will you be making next year and the year after that?
It is funny, though, that it's like the same things like where you see like interns who are like, how are you able to be an intern at the New York Times and then get a job? It's like, well, my parents are like bankrolling that. Just the same way there's like comedians who are like the secret trust fund comedians. Are like, how are you out here without working ever? It's like, oh, yeah. Secret wealth.
Yeah.
Well,
I do think there's comedians who like secretly work, but they don't want people to think they're not full time comedians. Like, yes, I'm like, you have to be doing something during the day, right? Like,
right.
You're not touring.
Yeah. What's that of the gig? Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm a professor. Okay. Cat's out.
God, this is so embarrassing. I'm a philosophy PhD and a professor.
Speaking of like exposure. So I was at this thing where like a comedy club was like a presenting sponsor of like a Jazz in the Park day. And part of it was like, hey, just so you know, like, I guess their thing was like, as the jazz bands would kind of take a break, like a promoter from the comedy club would come out and try and get people to like, he's like, yeah, you know, a lot of people are stressed these days. You know what's good? Laughter. Come on down to the club. We got a lot of great comedians. I actually want to give you a taste now. This guy's coming up. His name's Robert. He does a lot of stuff for us at the comedy club, but he's now doing a little bit some open mic stuff. And I said, he can come up real quick, give you guys a couple jokes just to give you guys a taste. The jokes were almost made me die. This is the one I will tell you. I remember word for word. He came up and goes, hey, so, and like his whole style was like kind of Mitch Hedberg-y, sort of like, I don't give a fuck, monotone.
Perfect
like,
for that scenario.
Yeah, exactly. When someone so damn is like, hey, so, been reading some J.K. Rowling lately. J.K.
Wow.
And then like everyone didn't do anything. And I groaned, but like in a funny, I was like, ooh.
Singers.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, we all got to get it in where we can. So respect to that joke. At least he didn't go somewhere transphobic with it. He just kind of made a weird play on JK.
That guy's going to be president.
Yeah. That joke did distract me from the impending climate catastrophe for a moment. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, as promised. All right, Kiki, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, a couple of things we're talking about. We're going to talk about how the X rebrand of Twitter is going well. We're going to talk about Glenn Beck's new book and like the inevitable right-wing mental boomerang. And also, I like I was intrigued by the cover. I don't know if I fell into the Glenn Beck trap, but the cover of the book has three men on it. It has
two are
Bill
instantly
Gates,
recognizable.
Joe Biden, flanking somebody who nobody knows who
is. It's Marlon Brando from the Island of Dr. Moreau.
It looks like Marlon Brando from the Island of Dr. Moreau crossed with like Rupert Murdoch, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought it was Murdoch, but it's Klaus Schwab, the leader, one of the leaders of the IMF, that they were like, this is going to move some copies.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, but we'll talk about that theory. We'll talk about the some of the tragedies that Oppenheimer completely glosses over.
Oh, well, and, like that. Like it's an atom bomb?
Yeah, yeah. like that one. All
cool,
of that.
Cool, yeah, yeah.
Plenty more. But first, Kiki, we do like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
Well, it's pretty dark. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. Yeah, it's not even noon yet. Let's go.
Yeah, let me just think about that J.K. Rowling joke real quick. All okay, right. I'm ready,
J.K.
Get to a good place so I can bring you all down.
Right. Yeah.
So my last week in news, I tried to pitch this story that we never were able to do because we didn't get a call back. But I was living and working in Baltimore at the time, and the like beloved giraffe at the zoo died. And I wanted to know what they do with zoo animals when they die. Like, do they have a giraffe funeral?
Right.
Do they bury them? Is there a giraffe graveyard? Like, what happens to them? And we never got a call back. And it's been bothering me for years. So very recently, I Googled it. And apparently, they all get cremated, but not for reasons that you might think. They get cremated so that people can't sell their body parts, like, on the black market.
Oh, right. And get, like, a giraffe skeleton. You're like, nobody's getting this skelly.
Right. If we can't have it, you can't either.
Wow.
So that is so selfish. I want to buy a giraffe skeleton. No, I'm just joking. That's,
you must have very tall ceilings in your apartment.
Do they have horns? Yeah. What's the shit on the top of their head?
Yeah, some of them have like those little guys.
Antennas for Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah, 5G.
Yeah, yeah, those aren't, because they have ears and them like nubs too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's my stupid question that I want to contribute to this discussion about giraffe anatomy. Giraffe head knobs. We'll see what comes up. That. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, awesome.
And
cones.
Where can I buy them?
Baltimore Zoo.
Yeah, exactly. Google giraffe ossicones for sale. So
yeah,
wait,
did you Google the shopping tab of Google, or did you go image results?
Actually, on Facebook Marketplace, they're very friendly to the black market.
Right. Wait. So at the time when you were covering that story, did the giraffe just kind of pass away due to natural causes? It wasn't like a dubious
it's
or
a drug
suspicious
overdose
death, was it?
Yeah, fentanyl's really infiltrating the zoo. No,
I've
I think he
wire.
Just died of natural causes. Actually, wait. On that same subject, do you guys know this like famous hippo Fiona is like at I think Cincinnati Zoo?
I'm not familiar.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Go on.
Hippo content is huge on the internet. Fiona is a celeb, and apparently, like that's the same zoo that Harambe was shot at. So they've just done this whole rebrand with this hippo. And I'm like, no, you can't like get away from your dark past.
Ooh, yeah. Wow. Cincinnati. So are they just like cranking out stars at the Cincinnati Zoo or something?
Apparently they got a really good PR record. Team.
Yeah, yeah, for real.
When I Google Cincinnati Zoo hippo, I see that they're mourning the loss of Henry the hippo back in 2017.
Oh, 2017. Yeah. Okay. Well,
they probably killed him.
Yeah.
Father of famous Fiona.
Oh, Fiona's father. Oh, you hate to see it. You hate to see it.
They're kind of setting us up for disaster because hippos are, you know, they will kill a motherfucker. Like, real. They're very deadly in the right circumstances. So
that was like my one little kid, like annoying factoid, how I say, like, hippos are actually the most dangerous, like, if like to humans. It's not this or that, but yeah. What they do. It's what they do.
Besides mosquitoes, that's my kid's favorite fact right now. You know
what
mosquitoes the deadliest
are deadly.
Animal is? Mosquitoes.
Because you're going very narrow for like bloodborne illnesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which fucks my younger kid up because he gets a lot of mosquito bites. He's got that sweet, sweet blood that the mosquitoes crave.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nothing
you can do.
sitting in bed waiting for mosquitoes to come and bite you to death. But
he doesn't fuck with them and be like, ooh, you know, like you could get, you know what you could get from that mosquito.
I think he does, like when we're not around. It would be my guess.
Yes.
Based on the fact siblings. That my youngest's hair has turned completely right. white.
Second word was Zika.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What is something, Kiki, that you think is overrated?
Something that is overrated. I think that in the year of our Lord 2023, we should be allowed to put our elbows on the table when we're eating. I think that this is a stupid rule that we're still abiding by. And I looked it up. And the reason is because apparently our tabletops used to be like on logs. So if you put your elbows on the table, it would like flip the whole table over. But like, that's not a problem anymore. So I think we should be more rude when we're having dinner.
Wait, the etiquette of elbows on the table was born out of eating off of floppy logs? What the yeah. fuck? I just thought... Okay, yeah. I mean, it's funny how quickly I just had my elbows on a table. Like, I think once my mom or like my grandmother gave up on trying to give me any sense of etiquette, but damn. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know. I mean, that makes sense. If you flip the table and get dinner all over somebody's lap, that's super rude, but like, that's not a risk anymore.
Yeah. What is it like eating a hamburger with your elbows on the table kind of thing? Just having, or just having a wide base. With like your fork and knife with elbows pointing. I'm just trying to put myself at the table right now and figure how I'm. Yeah, I'll eat a sandwich like this with my elbows just buried.
Right, like I'm in my 30s. My back hurts. Let me put my elbows on the table.
Yeah. It's probably like good for core strength not to have them on there, but also we need a rest in this year of our Lord 2023. My head is heavy.
Yeah. Are you here literally holding it up?
Yeah.
please stay with us.
What's something you think is underrated?
Something I think is underrated is saying less. I feel like the pendulum has swung too far the other way. Like we got too in our feelings as society. We're like too vulnerable. We're using like too much therapy speak, Jonah Hill. But this all comes from, I recently saw on TikTok this trend called crying girl makeup, where girls are doing their makeup to make it look like they've been crying. And I'm like, we got to stop. We got to stop fetishizing being sad. That's not good.
Right.
Is that just to have like kind of like red irritated eyes with like vague memories of mascara or something?
Pretty much. That's exactly right. And like they're kind of shiny. Like you might have pink eye or you might have been crying.
Right. Is that this is where I'm like old. I'm like that's appealing now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I'm 31, so I remember when on Zanga people were posting like emo semi-suicidal song lyrics, but I think we should have stopped there. Like we don't need to be making ourselves look like we've been crying. We have plenty of things to actually cry about.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like let your band t-shirts announce like your mental state. You know, that's like I remember, you know, like the goth kids were really good at just being like, oh, I can tell from your vibe, you probably were crying, but you're not, you don't have it on your face.
Yeah, when I picture crying girl makeup, I picture like streaks of like dark eye makeup, but the image results seem more like pink eyed with shiny glossy cheeks.
Right.
And I do think we should fetishize pink eye. Like let's do that instead of fetishizing sadness.
Pink eye makeup.
Staphylococcus. Wait, what is it called? What do you call it? What's pink eye actually called?
Is that a bukkake? What?
No.
Is that what he said?
Conjunctivitis.
It's
conjunctivitis.
Fart bukkake. Fart.
No,
two
I was like
eye
thinking
bukkake.
of a staph infection.
Yeah.
Stuff, but no. Yeah. Did you ever get? I never got pink eye. So maybe I should start fetishizing it because it's just one of those things that's always been out of reach for me. Or maybe I should just like fart.
Have somebody fart in your eye?
Yeah. Have my face farted on more often.
Yeah. You can get someone to do that on Craigslist like pretty easily, actually.
I mean,
pretty cheap. For like, you'd be surprisingly cheap.
Yeah. I mean, with a newborn, with a new baby, you know, I think if I just time it right, I could probably just get a direct one to the face anyway.
Yeah, so.
Hey, you never know. You never know.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about some news.
Zeit gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
And we're back. And Elon Musk's sprint to completely devalue Twitter as quickly as possible is kind of impressive. Like, yeah, he's doing work. He's putting in the work.
It's weird because it feels like it was by design from the beginning. Like, he's like, this is I'm in phase three. But all it is just him not hearing no from anyone at all.
Yeah.
And for the past 20 years, we are. Yeah. X.com is not doing great. Apparently, there's already problems within hours of announcing that, it's X.com. For starters, like, just X.com, X, many derivations of that, have already been trademarked by literally hundreds of companies, including Meta and Microsoft. So many people are like, yeah, I'm expecting lawsuits probably around this and their ability to use that as a brand. And then we also found out that, like, when they tried to take the fucking bird logos off their headquarters in San Francisco, the police just shut the whole thing down because they didn't have permits to, like, be operating, like, the heavy machinery you needed, like, to work on the exterior of the building. And, yeah, and it's just kind of like, those are, like, the little problems. And now we're also finding out that Musk has changed the names of the conference rooms to shit, like, sexy, but, like, with, like, the, like, a capitalized X or, like, exposure, E-capital-X-P-O-S-U-R-E. And many people were right to point out, like, let's not forget, he was accused of groping and exposing himself to a flight attendant that he basically got to put them on mute because of a big cash settlement. And that his other companies, like, we hear nonstop reports of, like, how it's, like, toxic sexist culture at places like Tesla. So I'd imagine, yeah, going into meet me in sexy for a talk, I'm sure it won't lead to any kind of complications if there even is HR at Twitter right now.
I'm sure he got all of them to quit like right away. That seems to be phase zero of the plan.
Yeah, 100%.
Is it called tweeting now or is it called Xing?
We don't fucking know. We're all calling it tweeting, but this leads to the next point is that because we're like, they're abandoning all that brand familiarity of like Twitter and erasing sort of the word tweet from our cultural lexicon, it's only going to cost Twitter about $20 billion in brand value. So that's what that has done. I'm not sure what that means, but I'd like when I do the quick maths, the last report we heard is that like basically it lost half of its value when he bought it at 40 some billion dollars. So then if it lost $20 in brand or $20 billion in brand value, I don't know how to do that math, but it sounds like not good.
I think it's $2 billion is left using quick maths.
Yeah. Okay. So if we have 44, 22 minus 20, and now it's a $2 billion company.
$2 billion. Okay. Which is impressive. I mean, he's killing it. If his goal was to completely rob it of all value, which like finance bros who like are adamant on him not being an idiot are like, it makes sense when you think about it. It kind of makes sense.
How so, sir? It's like, you know, like you want to unburden yourself of all that brand value. It's like expectation. You know what I mean? Right. And you can kind of start from scratch and make all that money back, I guess. Kiki, how have you been, you know, navigating this evolution of Twitter?
I don't know. Twitter used to be my favorite platform, but I tried to get on Threads, you know, like if we're going to be in a billionaire's terrarium, I feel like Threads is the new move. But like Threads is so corny. Like I can't get behind Threads. It's like I was telling somebody, it's like when you go to an open mic like the day after New Year's and there's all these new people there that have never done comedy before. That's how Threads feels. It's like all these people that don't know how to tweet. And so it's like weird attempts at being funny. And then like, you're seeing content from people you don't follow. So,
yeah. Or like the people that, shit. Like people I went to school with who now are like, to your point, are like, I got one liners. Check this out. I was just reading J.K. Rowling. J.K. Thread that shit. Like, yeah.
That guy's killing it on Threads.
Thread it.
Yeah. He had another one that I'm pretty sure is just one of these stolen like Rickles or Rodney Dangerfield jokes. I'm sorry, we keep bringing this guy up. The other one he said was, so I had to go to the doctor, my mother-in-law's doctor, because, we had to talk about her sleeping medication. Because it's not strong enough. She's not sleeping. It's supposed to put her to sleep. Like, that was the cadence of that joke. We're like, huh? It's like, all right, what else?
Wait, that was the joke?
Yeah, like, basically meant to be like, it sounded put like her to concerned sleep, like kill son-in-law, her. But it's like, these pills ain't working, doc. She's still talking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So anyway, spread the
I'm telling you, that guy's going to be the next TikTok star because people are going to stick around for the punchline and never find it. And the engagement is just going to be through the roof. He's going to sell out theaters comments. In no time.
They're like, he's doing art something? Up there. He's doing art up there. Yeah. Elon, though, it is wild. Like, what? He's just, what are the, are these ideas? Are these just reactions without a plan? I'm trying to really understand like what the room is like when he's pitching this shit to like the other Twitter people.
Yeah. I mean, it really feels like we saw what the room is like in Succession when Kendall Roy was like pitching, you know, like anytime Kendall Roy is pitching and it would just be like, yeah, so set it to super growth, double click it 5 times, pull in banking play, skyrocket growth to the moon, something like that. Like just like just tossing off these casual asides of like, you know.
Right.
What's the temperature in the room? What's the temperature in the room?
Yeah. Take the temperature for me. Yeah. It's just not because, yeah, his play at X.com is that he's hopes it will be some kind of all encompassing omni platform, including banking. Like, why the fuck would anyone trust you? Like, we don't even trust you to run this website efficiently. Like, that is just a place where we type words.
Yeah, Chiquita Banana and Dole Fruit don't even trust you enough to be on there anymore after they got fucking impersonated so many times. But yeah, sure, I'll put my savings. I put my savings into X.com savings.
Yeah.
No, I would rather be on neopets.com doing my baking. There's like this guy, he's proof that there is no such thing as a billionaire. How do you have so much time to come up with so much dumb shit?
Yeah.
Right.
Truly. It's not because of the ideas, folks. It's because his just weird, I guess, Kendall Roy chat game is just pretty good, I guess. I mean, we saw what happens like in that CNBC interview when like someone actually asks him a question. He falls the fuck apart. And he'll bring up a meme about fucking Princess Bride. And you're like, yeah. Oh, that's not an answer to the question, sir. But okay.
Well, I just think he should have stopped. Like, what, you know, like Dave Chappelle, like brought him out in a theater and everyone booed him. Like for most people, that would have been enough to like hide in a cave and never come back. But he just doubled down.
Yeah, truly. Well, he never gives up. No, we'll give him that.
Yeah, because everybody's just telling him to keep going because he has enough people that he's surrounding himself with that are just like, genius, sir.
Right. They're just haters because you're bawling so hard. Yeah. That's all. These are great ideas. They're broke boys. Yeah. Well,
bawling with a hard G.
Yeah, exactly. Bawling.
Bawling. All right. Let's check in with Glenn Beck. It's been a couple of decades, but. Yeah, I haven't had to say or think about Glenn Beck, I think, in a decade. Have we ever covered Glenn Beck on this show?
I feel like maybe as an aside, but it's not, I don't think as a focal point to be like, Glenn Beck, remember him? Because he's just fallen into obscurity since like his heyday of the late aughts.
Yeah, he's got to be a cautionary tale that like Fox News anchors tell each other, right? Like, because he was riding high and then got fired kind of at the peak, at the height of his dressing up as a founding fatherness.
Yep, exactly. To lead the charge against Barack Obama.
Wait, what did he get fired for?
I don't think it was ever like really clear other than like contract shit and like not thinking he was paid enough. And now he's like, check me out on Yahoo Fantasy Sports. It actually has nothing to do with fantasy sports, but it's like the streaming app that they use for that. You can go over there and, you know, if you type in this exact URL, you can find a live stream of me standing in front of a blackboard with cosplaying as Ben Franklin.
Yeah, exactly. I know when he left, it was just sort of like, I'm leaving Fox. And people were like, oh, okay. And I think that caused a lot of speculation because I think at the time people were speculating that it could have just been like toxic content equals ad exodus, and just that little bit of having him for a little bit, just they got scared really quickly. But either way, he left. He's gone on to do nothing that we have ever mentioned, but he manages to say, you know, somewhat relevant in the right wing takeosphere. But recently, like many other bigots of his kind, he has gone after Target for not going full Westboro Baptist and disappearing gay culture during Pride Month. And he basically was like, we have to boycott Target because yada, yada, grooming, blah, blah, protect the children's. And now he's got some dumbass book coming out and he is complaining that Target isn't selling it in their stores. He says, dear Target, this is on a tweet, why is Blowback, a warning to save democracy from the next Trump, a purely political book, allowed to be sold in your stores, but my book is not? And you're like, sir, you just spent like weeks on end telling people to not shop there. You hope they burn because demons run it. But then you're also like, sell my book, please. Honestly. The book itself is like a conspiracy-laden pile of Nazi farts, so there's not so much to discuss there in terms of substance. But again, like it is good to point out, it is being sold on Target.com, just not in their fucking stores, which again, have you been to the book section of a Target? And I use book very lightly.
Yeah, there's a couple books there.
It's like 10 books, usually, that's there. It'll be like whatever, if there's like a Stephen King book, whatever the Poppin' Kids book is, and then like a couple like random things.
I'm looking at the fantasy section, or sorry, not the fantasy section, the book section of Target. Because this is the same guy that would be like, I don't think Target has to sell to gay people, but they do have to sell my book.
Yeah, that's exactly, which again, it's just so, you see another moment like this where you have a right-wing hate grifter do the thing where he like screams about woke corporations and then only comes back around and is like, help me, because I also rely on you for my book sales. Shut the... What is this?
Yeah.
Good news is they are selling Prince Harry's book and Cat Kid Comic Club.
So okay. Yeah. So
yeah, Cat Kid's going off. It's the next shared cinematic universe that's going to fuck everyone up in like 10 years. I was trying to figure out, like, I'm not going to read it, but the cover got me. Because, and I think inadvertently so, like, you've got Bill Gates and Biden flanking some bald guy. Like, Bill Gates looks like he's like an operator. Like, he's wearing like a black, like, paramilitary uniform with his name on it, in case you didn't recognize Bill Gates. It says Gates on. And then, like, they're flanking a bald guy who, again, like, there's no way you have any idea who this person is. But I guess in the world of wild Nazi fart conspiracies, like, he is a household name and like a recognizable face. His name is Klaus Schwab. He's one of the leaders of the IMF. So, I mean, the International Monetary Fund probably, yeah, he's probably not like the coolest dude in the world. Like, he's, and so the book is about, like, watch out for the Great Reset, because the next step is going to fuck you up. And the Great Reset is this, like, international economic theory that was set to debut at Davos, and the Davos that got canceled by the pandemic. But it's, like, basically international billionaires coming together and being like, climate change is going to make people mad. And so we have to, like, bring the values of companies together with people and, like, stop being so completely distanced from what matters to people, which that sounds like a good idea. Uh-huh. Their method for doing that is through deregulation and, like, getting private companies, like, more involved in ruling the world.
Oh, which, like, law enforcement or that kind of shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the conspiracy is that the Great Reset was actually the cause of COVID. They, like, created the pandemic so that companies could come in and seize more power, which it seems like it's, like, basically impossible for companies to have more power than they have right now. So, right. Like, why kill millions of paying customers across the globe and, like, freeze the economy for a couple years to do that? I'm guessing the explanation in the book is some combination of, like, they hate white people and they don't like our freedom or some shit.
Right.
But I don't know. It seems like a mess. I feel like they were like, who is this? Is this YA literature? Like, it looks like it could be like a Hunger Games style book mixed with like a Tom Clancy book. And
yeah,
that's right. Why they're not putting it on shelves.
Yeah, they've got a whole new thing that they're pressing. They said that, like, in the book, there's, like, also the great narrative movement that is going to completely change the way it's going to address how we're perceiving the decay of, like, traditional values throughout the colonizer world. Mm. So, and then there's, like, mentions of the CCP and Vladimir Putin just for good measure. So I don't know what it means, but there's a lot of words that resonate with people, I guess.
It's all connected. I remember, like, seeing images of his show, like, post Fox, and he's standing in front of a chalkboard, and it is literally that meme from It's Always Sunny with, like, all the different things connected and, like, 50 different, like, circles, like, words that he's circled and then, like, drawn an arrow to another word. But I also, like, this just reminded me of, did you guys ever read the book Freakonomics? Do you remember that was, like,
hell yeah,
such a popular, like, it was, like, smart, it was, like, bestseller smart person.
Everyone
reading.
Had it in their bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone had it. It's still a popular podcast. The author, Stephen Dubner, I think is the New York Times journalist. He, like, I remember, like, at the height of that, I think it was his podcast, like, popularity, he, like, did an episode where he just, like, hung with Glenn Beck, and, like, Glenn Beck drove a race car around. And then they just, like, riffed on, like, some theory that driving race cars will make you drive safer because you're, like, aware that they're dangerous or some shit. But
oh, no.
I feel like we've never fully reckoned with what a reactionary hack. Yeah. And, like, that book in particular, like, that guy, I think in his follow-up to Freakonomics, like, he had something about how the climate crisis was actually not that big a deal because someone was going to, like, come through and solve it. And he, like, compared the climate crisis to the crisis in New York City at the turn of the last century when, like, there was horse poop everywhere because everyone was driving horses. And he was like, but progress naturally came through and solved that for us with cars. So now climate change is just like the latest thing, and we're going to figure it out by putting a bunch of gases into the atmosphere that'll make it cooler. And we're good here. And
that is such like fucking white guy thinking.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a leap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it sounds like your mom solved a lot of problems for you behind the scenes that you weren't aware of either, guy.
And I don't know how to fold a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Just but one they end little up in fact there. To know about me.
Yeah. But if I leave them around, someone folds them and puts them in there. So yeah. Problem solved.
I just want to say, if he wanted us to be scared of Bill Gates and Joe Biden, like, why did he make them look so cool on this book cover? Like, they like go hard as fuck here. Like,
yeah,
the coolest Bill Gates has ever looked.
Joe Biden looks like he could like shoot a fucking jet out of the sky with like a handgun. Like that's how like his like face is like, what's fucking next for me? Which I'm usually he's asking that out of confusion, not out of confidence.
Yeah, like not, this is a Joe Biden I would vote for. Like he looks present, engaged. He remembers that he's president.
He's got good eyesight. It looks like he looks like he's just looking killed very a far away.
Room of bad guys with his laser eyes. Yeah, like the Biden on the cover feels like it's laser eye Biden. It's like dark Biden just with his laser eyes turned off.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's charging. And the guy next to him, he looks turtly enough for the Turtle Club. I don't know who he is, but I mean, you said who he is, but I still don't really.
Exactly.
I don't understand. That was a lot of words.
I don't believe you.
When you said IMF, I thought you meant Impossible Missions Force, like from Mission Impossible. Because isn't that like the name of the group that he's part of? Anyway, just another factoid I just want to point out. I think like as I like just kind of peruse a little bit more about what the book is, it's like any fucking conspiracy book for the right, which is essentially meant to say like all the progress you're seeing around you is fucking evil. And you're going to have to explode the corporations or people of goodwill in order to preserve our like archaic way of living. Because in like just sort of one of the descriptions goes on to talk about how Glenn Beck and the co-author reveal the most important technologies and social and cultural changes that will soon cause an unprecedented level of disruption in the United States. They also outline the dangers and opportunities associated with these disruptions and provide a plan to protect individuals and families from losing their liberty.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Basically, I think which means their perceived right to be terribly racist and hateful in public. Maybe, I think, is how they describe liberty.
I think
these
that's usually what it means.
Yeah. But anyway, when in the intense struggle for the future of humankind, whose side will you be on?
On the
Freakonomics guys, like, he was fully in on, like, there were those leaked emails where people tried to, like, cherry pick. It was, like, the first, like, you know, Podesta emails leak, but about climate change, where they, like, pulled all these emails and then like cherry picked these little details to make it seem like climate scientists were lying about climate change. And he like went on Fox and was like, I think we have to take a whole new look at the entire narrative that they've been giving. That's like this New York Times reporter who wrote Freakonomics. I mean, I'm sure people have like written that book off at this point, like who were paying attention, but I do feel like it's still out there and still has the cachet of like being associated with the New York Times, and he's a fucking complete hack.
Right.
Yeah.
This is news to me. I thought it was just like a good bathroom reader that everybody got behind. I didn't know he was a kook.
Well, I think at that time what he was saying was like just vague enough that you couldn't quite parse like, you know, maybe what his ultimate worldview was. And I think also just like the shorthand, like New York Times, good.
Yeah. New York Times, good. Yeah. We should all just think a little bit more like economists.
There you go. Got it. Like
NUI all over again.
NUI all over.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
And we're back.
We're back.
And if I seem a little distant, it is because I'm coming to you from the, like, 15 seconds in the past. For some reason, there's a fucking long-ass lag that is happening. I'm
pay that bill,
hearing
dude.
Everything everybody says 10 seconds later. I apologize to our guest. I apologize to my parents. I'm better than this, I promise.
Didn't apologize to me, though.
I apologize to Miles, of course.
Okay,
but all right. I just feel like you're forward. Used to it at this point.
The non-apologies? Yeah. A little too used to them at this point.
All right. Should we talk Oppenheimer? I don't think, Miles, you haven't seen Oppenheimer yet.
Nah. This week, though. This week, I will go to look at Cillian Murphy's spooky face in IMAX, I think.
Spooky face? I need his Botox beautiful face. What are you talking about?
Wait. What? So you, Cillian, he doesn't look haunted as fuck to you?
Yeah, but maybe that's my thing.
Okay, I'm just making sure we're seeing the same thing. I'm not knocking you if that's what you're into, but I'm like, he haunted. But I get that, then that's why he stays working, because you can't fake that face.
I like a good hollowed out husk of a man, personally.
Yeah.
That turns me on.
Great.
Have you seen the picture where people like took pictures from the front row of the IMAX? And it's like, it's just so warped. Because it's just a wall-sized close-up of his face, and it's like, man, his right jowl is really the star of this shot.
They shouldn't sell seats that close to the fucking screen. Because I saw Barbie in the second row, and I was definitely testing like the limits of like what is too close to a screen, because it was like a bigger screen, and I was like, my head was like jerking around, but then also like the perspective does shift a bit when the viewing angle is so acute. Anyway, why am I going to complain to the capitalist theaters to be like, sell less seats, okay? To make the experience better for everyone.
Fine. If you just stand on your seat and in an athletic position and then just look back and forth really fast the whole time, that helps.
Yeah. Blends into one image.
All right. So Oppenheimer, as we mentioned on our weekend digest, is making way more money than anyone expected. Currently has 94% approval rating from critics and audiences on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's coming under some heat for some things that it just kind of glosses over.
Yeah, I feel like this week I've seen nonstop articles about like what the movie gets right and what is made up, or other things like, here's the real Oppenheimer story, or things you probably didn't know were not there in the Oppenheimer movie. That seems like to be taking up a lot of space right now as people watch it.
Are the articles like, they actually dropped those bombs on Japan? It's fucked up. Like, do you see how big those things were? And like, super hot.
I don't know if you know this, but like, those bombs like killed a lot of people after. It wasn't just him having sex with Florence Pugh all the time.
Like in front of Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so I guess Oppenheimer illustrates the devastation and his guilt only through like subjective visions that Oppenheimer has. The whole movie is told from his perspective.
Right.
It like stays on the perspective of Oppenheimer himself, which conveniently allows a movie about one of the greatest horrors in modern history to be blockbuster entertainment for mainstream audiences.
Right. It's like, but he was so conflicted when he made it, though.
Yeah.
Just so you know. But also, people's shadows were burnt into concrete from the blast.
But he felt bad.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, hot take, I feel like it's almost like going to McDonald's. Like, I don't go to McDonald's to feel good. Like, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to Oppenheimer to like learn history. Like, you're just learning about this weird dude.
Yeah, I think it on some level, like, I get that, like, as a work of like entertainment, it's like, okay, there's plenty of like bummer shit you could watch if you really want to like drill down into like the atom bomb and shit like that. But I think for like when you're talking about someone who's what they gave to the world, and you kind of avoid like what that actually ends up being, then it feels a little bit like, well, are you telling the whole story to just kind of focus on him there? Because I think there is so much complexity there that you can make like a good story out of. But I get why people be like, huh, you kind of gloss over like where all that work led. But okay.
Yeah, big part of the story.
Yeah.
So one of the details that our writer JM kind of points out also gets glossed over in addition to the dropping of the bombs in Japan is the land in Los Alamos where the Manhattan Project was based was like, first of all, forcibly secured, and indigenous and Hispanic communities were relocated. Lands were seized by armed soldiers who showed up with letters written in English that like the people who lived there couldn't understand because they sent no translators. And part of the like reasoning that the military and Oppenheimer specifically used to pick Los Alamos as the site of the Manhattan Project was because competing sites such as in Utah would have meant evicting white farmers. And they also saw the dispossessed Hispanic and indigenous residents as a potential, quote, cheap labor force for the Manhattan Project.
Oh, my God. So they're like, OK, once they're displaced, they're going to be desperate enough to come work for us.
Yeah. So like, even if you're centering his point of view and like his decision making going into this, it is like you are having to do a lot of work on his behalf to just make him seem humane. And the big thing is like, and this part feels wildly cinematic, like the sort of thing that Christopher Nolan would have to explicitly be like, man, that would be an amazing thing to show, is that like they knew the area around the Trinity test site was like far from uninhabited. So there are like all these communities who lived around the like where they set off the explosion who were not warned about the dangers of the experiments. And like, so there's like dozens of families within 20 miles. And these are like largely poor families and ranchers and farmers. And there were like all these storms on the day that they were supposed to conduct the test. And a physicist warned Oppenheimer that this could be a catastrophe. And Oppenheimer relayed this message to the military by saying, the weather today is whimsical.
Oh, it'll whimsically carry radioactive fallout miles away. Is that what he means?
Yes.
Very whimsically? Yeah. Oh, the whimsy of radioactivity. Okay. Sure.
Yeah. He had that cool quote about being become death, destroyer of worlds, burning a hole in his pocket. And he was like, I got to use this thing, man. Like, this is going to fucking rule when we set this thing off.
Dude, you got to put, you know how thick the glasses are you got to put on to even fucking look at it? It's going to be fucking wild, bro. I love the too, that the guy who told him that was Enrico Fermi.
Who?
Yeah. Yeah.
Enrico of the Fermi paradox, for people who like to talk about like space life out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Make a story about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah.
So just a little like scene that was omitted. So a meteorologist warned that the weather that morning was likely to spread fallout far and wide over New Mexico's civilian population. Right in the middle of a period of thunderstorm, the meteorologist complained in his journal of the scheduled test, "What son of a bitch could have done this?" And so as the storm raged in the hours before the test, Fermi warns Oppenheimer there could be a catastrophe. Oppenheimer took a break from reading the poetry of Baudelaire to relay to the military the weather is whimsical thing.
I love that.
He's fucking reading poetry, like just being as he's about to like end the lives of people and like, you know, poison generations.
Right, right, right. Because yeah, that fallout is like still a legacy to this day. I definitely know about.
Yeah, it affects people's DNA. Yeah.
Also, that quote is so corny. Like, why? Like, I don't know. If you're like quoting. What the fucking death thing? Like, that guy shouldn't be allowed to make decisions? I don't know.
Right. It's like, but he's going to help us flex our power on the communists. That's the real big part of this, too.
Yeah. So they went through with the test. It was essentially a dirty bomb by today's standards because it, like, didn't succeed that well. I think only there was, like, 20% of it that didn't go off, or maybe it was only 20% went off.
Yeah.
Yeah, 20% of the core went off and the rest was, you know, scattered across New Mexico and beyond. Literally ruined a batch of film at a Kodak factory in Indiana.
That's close by, based on my rough geography and knowledge of the United States. So they're in New Mexico and it blew all the way to far.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What?
Oh, boy. That's 1,267 miles from the middle of New Mexico to Indiana. Okay, so...
That's middle America.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. And like, that wasn't as far as it went. That was where it went and ruined a batch of film. Like,
right.
That's how it was still that powerful, that far away. The military collected radioactive fallout, and you might assume that was in order to document and make decisions better, but it was totally just based on like legal ass covering. And for thousands of people who lived near the Trinity site, they were awoken that morning. So this is the detail, like this is the most cinematic, like fucked up depiction of this entire experiment that I could imagine. So the thousands of people who lived near the Trinity site are awoken that morning by a goddamn nuclear blast. That a thing that like has not been possible, doesn't exist as far as human assumptions about reality, like human understanding,
or
has
technology,
been possible.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Most of those people didn't even realize what had happened until the news of the bombing of Japan. And their land, crops, livestock, and water were irradiated, leading to generations of people suffering from various types of cancer. In the weeks after the test, they were never advised that their land, crops, livestock, and water may have been contaminated. Like, it just feels like that's all incredibly cinematic.
Yeah.
But we can't tell the story from the perspective of the people and have to do like the great man theory of history where everything's controlled by a protagonist who is sitting with detached bemusement and reading poetry and, you know, making massive decisions that affect the lives of thousands of people.
In millions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, Hales Have Eyes had a better, they did a better job of depicting the impacts of nuclear.
Yeah, truly, the Hills Have Eyes is a story for the people about the downwinders from the fucking Trinity blasts. Yeah. Yeah, and like, again, it is wild too, because to tell that story, you have to reveal a lot about the United States government, about how commerce works, about the motivations to just be like, yeah, we're actually don't want to displace white people. We want to displace like Hispanic and indigenous people. We don't care about the poor people downwind. And if they try and come with us with evidence that they've actually suffered because of this testing, we're just going to fucking turn a blind eye because those people have no they've never had and never will have any kind of financial recourse due to what happened there. So that's
instead fun. They'll come work for us. So
yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, if you want, we'll test your body for a couple bucks. Huh? That could be fun.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me when my sister and I, we went to Vietnam and we went to, because over there they call it the American War, not the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And like the pictures in that museum are so much more horrific than anything you've ever been taught over here. Yeah.
It's not a GI with like a sleeveless, you know, fatigue jacket on with cigarettes in his helmet singing Fortunate Son. It's like, yeah, and that's what it was. We don't know about chemical warfare or these other terrible things and napalm and shit like that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always like, That's what's funny is like this way, I guess it makes sense because America, like the film industry is not always going to really crank out those real sort of sober eyed depictions of what our like imperial wars end up looking like on the other side. It is going to be like, yeah, there was Oppenheimer. He did that. And yeah, maybe it was kind of like these guys in Germany kicked some butt and then they came back and they're still just kind of like we're not left with like a real total telling of like the humanity of war. But hey, that's for the European filmmakers to do because they have fantastic anti-war films.
Right.
Is this movie funded? Like, I know like Top Gun has like military funding behind it. Do you know if like Oppenheimer does?
I don't know. I mean, unless usually like it happens because you want to use the military's toys and they're like, fine, mm-hmm. if you want to play with our toys on camera, then like we have like a say in stuff. So I'm not sure with this one, but I'd imagine... Yeah. I'd imagine there was some consulting on some level, probably. But yeah, I have no idea.
There's an election coming up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We'll see how this is used for. I don't know which party will benefit from Oppenheimer. Seems like Barbie is definitely being used by the right to beat the culture wars to death. But I don't know about Oppenheimer yet.
I mean, it is crazy. Like the people who are called the downwinders, who were like directly affected by this, like the fallout. Like the government won't acknowledge or compensate those families.
Yeah.
Like that them specifically. They're just like, yep, nope, that never we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
We can't hear you. And
so
they again feel erased by history due to the film's glaring omission of their story and erased by the government. And like Biden last year extended the government's Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, but it still doesn't cover anyone affected by the fallout from the Trinity test. And some lawmakers are trying to use the movie's popularity as a way to finally change that. But so like maybe there's a good thing that could come out of this, but it doesn't seem like it's based on sort of the narrative trajectory of the movie that would happen.
Right, right, right. Yeah. I mean, we see this all the time, like just cancer clusters that pop up near like EPA Superfund sites or how long it takes for like the EPA or the government to be like, oh, yeah, that is a cluster of cancer cases that was caused by something that happened like in L.A., like where the Jet Propulsion Laboratory is, you know, where they were like doing a lot of work trying to figure out how they can make shit travel very far to just either destroy things or send things into space. That contaminated a lot of water, like in the San Gabriel Valley, that meant there's like these cancer clusters that popped up that took a while for them to be like, oh, yes, this is. Okay, so we need to put like full-time water treatment like everywhere near this place because, yeah, we were too busy like playing with chemicals to figure out how to kill people better.
Right.
It just feels like I can't imagine for every like the groups of downwinders there are, there's plenty more. I mean, if we think of how long it took for people even in Flint, Michigan to even be acknowledged.
Yeah.
So
I'm just Googling how far the propulsion laboratory is from my house. When did that happen?
Oh, right. This was in the 60s. It's fine. It's fine. You're you're completely different water district, so it's okay. It's people in Pasadena and La Cañada, Flint Ridge, and Altadena that are typically the ones that
we don't like Pasadena anyway. The parking's terrible.
Yeah. And they didn't let black people own property till very late in the game. So yeah. We have our feelings there.
Well, Kiki, such a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I am on Instagram as It's Kiki Anderson. My podcast, Indecent with Kiki Anderson, is also on Instagram as Indecent Kiki, and you can stream us anywhere you get your podcast.
Mm.
And is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
I'm watching Righteous Gemstones right now. My boyfriend loves it, so it's very like bro-y humor, but I'm getting behind it. It's fun.
Have you watched all the seasons of it?
We're on the most recent one, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I still have to watch. Well, it's three, right? Season three now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm waiting to, yeah, I'm a little that complete before I dive back in. Because, yeah, I love that show.
Danny McBride, he's a genius.
Yeah. Miles, where can people find you? What is the work of media you've been enjoying?
Wherever you have at-based applications, Miles of Gray, G-R-A-Y. Just find me there. I'm doing shit. Also, if you like true crime, I got a new true crime podcast out called The Good Thief, where we talk about the search for the modern-day Robin Hood of Greece, which is a really dope story. So please check that out. You can find Jack and I talking basketball on our basketball podcast. Miles and Jack got mad boosties. And I'm talking 90 Day Fiance with Sophie Alexandra on 420 Day Fiance. And some work of media. I'm not going to front, man. The Steph Curry documentary, underrated. Pretty good. Pretty good. Not going to lie. I mean, I think not that I was going in to be like, this better suck. I'm not a Curry hater by any means, but it really helps underscore how exceptional he is. So inspiring story and a guy who respects his mother. We love to see that.
You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien, on Threads at @Jack_O_Brien. Tweet I've been enjoying. I mean, Rob Delaney had a good, he tweeted, my favorite letter. You sure you want to know? Because it's easily the most twisted one, attributed to the sassy billionaire. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, is there a song that you think people might enjoy?
I think let's go out on this track from a band that only put out two songs called Lion. And I think people have probably heard this track. It gets around. It's called You've Got a Woman. And it's a really dope track because it was this Dutch progressive, prog drummer wanted to put a band together and found this vocalist. And they put together this psychedelic soul track. And it's just I don't know. It's one of those tracks you listen to and you're like, is this now? Or this was from the future, from the past. So check this out. This is Lion with You've Got a Woman.
All right, we will link off to that in the footnotes. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa. The new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise. The sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.